Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations stance point. With your host, Dan Rennie.
Welcome to Let's Talk. Before we continue, I want to stop to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land where we broadcast from in the West End of Brisbane, and also pay my respects to elders, past and present. Thank you for your company. Well, it's the race that stops the nation, but do we stop to think of the animals, the excessive alcohol consumption, the fact that the entire sport revolves around gambling? We hear that they're the best-kept animals with trainers, handlers, housing, the best food, etc. But is it natural to be racing over great distances at such speed and velocity? To be whipped, disease we have over the years, young horses euthanised after a terrible tumble on the track. I will admit I watched this race, and perhaps it's due to tradition or the fact that my father loved the ponies. But to answer some of our burning questions is Let's Talk regular from Deadly Science, Corey Tutt. How are you, brother?
Hey, Yama, you mob. I'm down here on the lands of the Ngunnawal people, and I just want to pay my respects to their ancestors and elders for having me on their land. And I'm actually currently with the Jilka Minyan kids, and we're doing some Deadly Science down here, and they've come all the way from Jilka Minyan near Katherine, near Matarenka. But we're talking horse racing today, and I'm very much the similar cuz. You know, I feel I actually personally don't watch horse racing or support it, but, you know, my old man loved it. He constantly had a little radio piece in his ear, and he's always listening to the ponies. And so there is a bit of history and soft spot for horse racing, but personally I've never supported it.
Mm. Well, it was run and won yesterday, a big event, as it always is, and... You know, as I said at the top there, lots of alcohol consumption, lots of gambling, and that all plays its part in, I guess, the horse racing industry.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, and there's also the other consideration as well. So, you know, to create a thoroughbred and to create a horse that, you know, that is good enough to run in the Melbourne Cup or the Everest, you know, you have to go through a lot of horses to get to that point. It's not just you breed a magic horse. Actually, you might go through 8 or 9 horses before you find one that's actually good enough. And from that means that there's horses that are, you know, that genetically aren't that fast that often end up as dog food, or they end up, you know, in pretty terrible places. And I guess, you know, at what cost? You know, everything that we enjoy that exploits animals and things like that. And, you know, I'm neutral to it. For me, I don't support it personally, but, you know, every one of these sort of sports that involve animals comes at a cost. It comes at a cost to humans, and it comes at a cost to animals.
Yeah, we saw what was happening in the greyhound industry as well, the poor ditch lickers there. But, you know, are these animals, are they as well cared for as we're led to believe?
Most definitely. And one of the reasons is that they've got to care for these animals well to make sure that they are at the peak of their performance so they can make as much money as possible. So when I was shearing, old Nathan Tinkler used to have this farm called the Patteratic Farm, and that was in Scone. And I used to look at this hill when I was shearing. I used to see this farm from this hill. And they had hydro baths. They had the most pedicured grasses, the diets. There's a lot that goes into horse racing, and there's a lot of people in horse racing that do actually really care about the animals, and that's something to worth note. They're not all, you know, evil people. There's actually a lot of people in the animal industry that work with horse racing because it's a good job. There's a lot of nutritionists as well that, you know, control what the horses eat. There's a lot of people that are actually really good people in horse racing, but I personally don't condone it. I don't really support it because of the things like alcohol, gambling, the stress on the horses, and there's that argument that some people come up with is that horses, you know, really like horse racing and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't think it's actually the case. I think that we're playing on the instinctual fear of horses and we're getting them to run for sport, which is one of those things.
That was my next question. How much strain and stress does it put on a racehorse?
Oh, it puts a tremendous amount of stress and strain, just like any athlete. You know, if you have a football player that you know, he runs, you know, he runs and he puts his body over the limit, or she puts his, her body over the limit, they could tear an ACL. But with humans, we have things to repair that. With a horse, it's very hard to do because they rely on all fours to stand. And we can't really put them on crutches and things like that. So if a horse breaks a leg, it's generally going to get a needle or a, you know, a sleepy needle, and they're going to get put to sleep. So it is a bit of a strain. And the other thing as well we've got to consider is that animals that are prey animals, like land prey animals, I'm going to ask you a question, cuz. Whereabouts do their eyes sit on their head normally? Like horses. Do you think of horses? Where do they sit in their head?
On the side of their head.
Yeah, so if you think about all prey animals, so we talk about alpacas, we talk about horses, we talk about donkeys, we talk about all of them. Anything that gets eaten by a large carnivorous predator, their eyes are on the front of their head. So a big cat, dogs, on the front of their head. Anything that's a herbivore or a ruminant, generally on the side of their head. So instinctually, horses, and horses are a bit different, but wild horses instinctually fear humans. And the reason for that is because anything on the side of the on the front of their anything with their eyes on the front of their head, they're instinctually going to fear because their predators have the eyes on the front of their head. So like big cats, for example, you know, alpacas are used as sheep guards to protect lambs from foxes, and they're very, very good at it because their main predator in Peru is a puma and has the eyes on the front of their head, so that they automatically fear foxes and they kill foxes because they are protecting their creole, their, on some occasions, lambs.
Now, horses, they're pack animals, right? And, you know, they're highly intelligent. They're, you know, beautiful, beautiful creatures. Yeah, they're, you know, when they're separated or they're trained up like this, are they missing their pack?
Sometimes, but I think for most times they will share a paddock with a mate, something like that. But horses are incredible, great pets, are very nurturing, especially domestic.
Sorry, Buzz, you're breaking up a bit there.
Sorry, I think horses are absolutely amazing, especially domesticated horses. They're great pets. They love their carers and their owners and things like that. So I think with the horse racing stuff, they do put them in paddocks with other horses. But obviously leading up to race time, they would probably separate them to prevent them from getting any injuries or anything like that, because they want to keep the horses, you know, nice and healthy for the race. You know, and it's weird that we have so many race horses for these events, right? But that's it. Like, once they get to a certain age, they're just put in a paddock and they're cared for by people that really love horses, and they're great people. But, you know, it's weird that they get all this care right up to the point where they're no longer used to race with, you know. And I think that's problematic too, because, you know, you have a horse that is lucky enough to be genetically bred to be good enough to run in a race, and if they're really good, they'll be used for breeding, so they have that lifestyle forever. But if they're not, they're probably going to get adopted out or euthanized, which is a bit strange.
What's the average lifespan of a horse, and will a racehorse have an extended life due to those genetics you talked about there, more so than a wild horse?
So it really depends. It depends on injury. It depends on if they can rehome that horse. You know, Brumbies in the wild have a lot to contend with in terms of food and snakes and things like that. I mean, horses on farms have snakes to contend with as well, but, you know, it's a lot harder for a Brumby to probably survive in the wild than it is a captive bred horse that is fed and looked after properly. But there's just so many horses there's so many people are trying to breed that next Mackayvie Diva, right? And there's so many horses that go into making a Mackayvie Diva or a Farlap that, you know, there's a good proportion of them that end up as pedigree cow, unfortunately. Or glue.
So the old glue factory is a real thing.
Yeah. Yep. Probably not so much anymore. It's more synthetic, but mainly they become dog food. Or, you know, some people do eat horse liver and they do eat horse meat. So, you know, that's generally where they end up if they don't get adopted.
Who's eating horse meat? That's what I want to know.
There's people that eat it.
Wow.
yeah. Yeah, but you know, it's mainly dog food.
Okay. Now, what about the dish lickers? I've mentioned before the greyhounds. Probably the only other sport I can think of where, you know, the animals are forced to race along there. How do they go?
Greyhounds are really cool. I remember when I was a kid, I remember living behind the Bulleye racetrack down in the Illawarra region. I remember people being very horrible to greyhounds. So, again, I've never supported it because I have vivid memories of people yelling at dogs and hitting dogs. But I worked at the RSPCA earlier in my career, and we actually adopted out a lot of greyhounds, and they're very sweet dogs. Actually, one of the easiest dogs to look after if you do adopt a greyhound, because they only really need one walk a day.
They sleep a lot too, don't they?
They do, and they love your company. They're built for that real power, you know, that power running. But they don't need much, and they're actually really good dogs. So there's a lot of people that are actually doing really good work in this space, like Ryan Pappenhausen, who plays for the Melbourne Storm. He's an ambassador for New South Wales greyhounds, and he, you know, their group actually adopts out a lot of greyhounds. Again, it's one of those things, it's supply and demand. There's a lot of people that, you know, a lot of them do get adopted, but some of them unfortunately do get a bit of leash of arm and they do die, and that's really unfortunate. I don't really support the racing, but I actually really like greyhounds as dogs. I've got a lot of friends that have got greyhounds, and they're really beautiful dogs. So if you are looking to adopt a dog, I definitely recommend the greyhound because they're really great.
And you see them racing, and you think they must be vicious because they're darting after this little fluffy bunny. But the opposite, hey?
No, they're very placid dogs. They're very sweet dogs. And they also, if you're going to the gym and you've got an ex-greyhound dog, they'll make you look proper shame at the gym because they've always got much bigger muscles than you.
Yeah, beautiful dogs. Oh.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's really important that we actually, you know, I understand that people, you know, rely on the horse racing industry and the greyhound industry for work and things like that. And there is a lot of people that do really care about these animals. And our opinions are our opinions alone. And it's just really important that we, you know, as a society, we, you know, we got to value things at what cost. And at the cost of, like, horses just being sort of bred to, you know, this kind of vanity, which is like, you know, to win the horse race, to win money, to, you know, to be in the upper echelons of society, is it really worth it? And that's the question we've all got to ask. And I think that it's really important that, you know, we don't, like, people can do what they want, and horse racing is going to exist, well, regardless of my opinion or not, or your opinion, Dan. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we need to have more education, especially around the gambling side of things, because, you know, every year that the Melbourne Cup is on or the Everest is on, there's someone that's been driven to the decisions they've made because of gambling.
And yep.
I think that's something we've got to really consider as humans, is that something that, you know, we're going to continue to support. If it is, then there's got to be the right education. You can say they've got all the ads and stuff, but there really should be limits on what people can gamble, especially if they're, you know, if they don't have the right education with that.
Yeah, you see people going to the races or going to the pub or the TAB and betting, even though they're not gamblers, just because it's the Melbourne Cup or the Everest, as you said there. So that's, you know, that's how it begins. That's a slippery slope that mob fall down. And yeah, it is a bit. It's a big problem in this country, and especially in horse racing. But again, not going to knock anyone for their enjoyment of horse racing. I was genuinely curious about the, you know, the welfare of the horses.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, for every winner, genetically they've got to go through numerous amounts of horses to get to that point, to get to that horse that is better than all the rest. Like, you know, it's like having Latrell Mitchell, right? There's only one Latrell Mitchell. You know, there's a lot of really good deadly black fellas that play footy, but there's only one Latrell Mitchell, there's only one GI, there's only one JT. You know, you can't, for every football, for every JT and every Latrell Mitchell, there's hundreds of footballs that come through, right?
Mm.
And that's the very same with horse racing. It's the very same. For every winner, for every champion, there's got to be hundreds of horses that come before them, if not thousands.
Yeah. Well, of course, horses are not native to Australia, but blackfellas and horses have a long history, you know, going right back to the wars and the drovers and the ringers and stockmen. So that relationship with horses is a pretty firm one with our mob, hey?
Most definitely. And you see it now, especially in the NP, in Central Queensland, a lot of young blackfellas and young ladies, they're all, they work on these farms and they work symbiotic with these horses. And owning horses is great. I had a horse as a kid and I have great memories of my horse. And I think, you know, and that, like, having pet horses is awesome. I just hate seeing them suffer because it's not right.
Corey Tutt, Deadly Science, we always love having you on each week, brother. Thank you very much for coming on and yarning horse racing.
Take care.
Before we wrap up today, a reminder about the vigils being held right across the country for the memory of young Cassius Turvey, who was murdered walking home from school with his friends. Here in Brisbane, 6 p.m., King George Square. Get on out there and show your support.